we've got our police officer friends in for our police forum. We've got John Reed, president of the Toronto Police Association. He's with us. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. And Hank Edzinga, 640 Toronto crime specialist and former Toronto police inspector, joining us as well. Thanks, Hank.
Good morning, Greg. Great to be here as always.
Thank you. We'll see if you feel that way 15 minutes from now. We'll rough you guys up a little bit and see how you feel. John, this was a really hard week. I'm trying to remember a 7-day span, and it started the evening post the eclipse last Monday when there was an attack on a Toronto police officer trying to prevent a crime. But I'll ask Hank the same question. I can't think of a scenario. I was hearing from people I know in the States, like a couple time zones away, given what's with civilians and attacks on police in Toronto. Three of them, including the Friday stabbing that we'll get to in a little bit. Have you ever heard of those kind of numbers where three of your officers are attacked by civilians or alleged criminals within a 6-day span?
So I'll tell you, Greg, it's John here.
Yeah.
So we haven't had that much frequency, and unfortunately, we're seeing it more and more. And I got to be honest, I'm angry. I'm frustrated by what's going on. And I can tell you our membership are as well. You know, we have these officers who are out there doing their job, you know, trying to keep the public safe. And we're not seeing any kind of support for the police out there. And I think that has the impact, quite honestly, when you start diminishing the support and the importance of police and that uniform, I think it starts to diminish the respect people have. And consequently, we end up with situations kind of that we've been seeing more recently.
Let me follow on that, because I agree. I think there's things that politicians should be saying. There's things politicians should be doing. But on a practical level, there's something in the water supply, right, with these three incidents. These three incidents, I get it, John, they don't happen in a vacuum. But even if the mayor of a city, the premier of the province is adamant and gets in front of microphones and says the things that I agree that they should be saying, it may not change Friday and that stabbing. It may not change Monday night. What are your officers telling you that is out there? Is it simply a lack of deterrent? Is it simply a lawlessness factor? What is it?
So the way I see it is that it is a lack of deterrence, and there's a lack of consequence, quite frankly. And this lack of consequence, I think, emboldens people, and particularly our criminal element. You know, we start looking at like the carjackings, where people are breaking into people's homes to steal keys and assaulting them. You know, those instances there, we never used to see those. But the lack of consequence, I think, is really having a major impact, you know, on society, but more so with the criminal element.
Hank, is that what you're seeing? When I see a video, I think I saw this one in not in London, England, but somewhere in the UK, where it just looked like the entire street was brawling with 6 or 7 cops, like a 6-year-old was involved, a 60-year-old was involved. And it's the easiest thing in the world to say when an officer stops you and asks you what you're doing or stops you for a speeding ticket, you're as respectful as you can be. But somewhere along the way, we've gone from there to here, and it's quite frightening.
Yeah, I agree that there is a lack of deterrence, whether it's general or specific deterrence, repercussions for these types of offenses. And if we look at the offenses from last week, you know, the first assault against the officer with the stolen car takedown, I don't think that's all that unusual. It's quite a normal thing. I shouldn't say normal, but a regular thing that when officers try and arrest some of these criminals for these offenses, that they fight back. The other two incidents, the one on Queen Street, the one at College and Lansdowne, I think we can look at what's happened and make a pretty good assumption that there's some mental health issues there. And we talked about it last week, the societal problems that are leading to this increase in mental health issues and spilling out onto the street, and the police officers who are left there to deal with them. And I think that's causing a real problem right now.
Yeah, John, like I, you know, not that it's brazen of me to say, but I think it's an obvious thing to say. When we're about to do something bad as a kid or as an adult, and I've noticed this through parenting, I think two things go through your mind. A, can I get away with it? B, what happens if I don't? And I just don't, I get where you're at. I don't know, in a case like Friday, is that person that would take a knife out and stab a police officer thinking, well, I know this much about the bail system, or I know this much about the court system. Like, to Hank's point, this is a deranged, disturbed individual that would consider such a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. There are obviously some issues there. I can't obviously get into the actual details of that, mm-hmm. as it is under the being investigated by a special investigations unit. But a particular instance like that, where there may be mental health challenges involved, yes. But I think, once again, I really do believe that it's the societal view of police and what police are able to do and what respect they should, quite honestly, be given. On a day-to-day basis when they're out doing their job. And I'll remind everybody, every interaction we have here in Toronto with people, with a uniformed police officer, they're on body cams. So our officers do a great job. They're very respectful, but they're only responsible for 50% of the interaction. And when I say that, they have to respond to what happens when they deal with an individual. You know, and to Hank's point, trying to arrest somebody that doesn't want to be arrested is not pretty, and they can get very violent. And obviously, in some instances, result in fatalities.
Hank, this is a very young officer, around 22 years of age, very, very young. And he had to use his revolver to subdue the person that stabbed him. This became what he thought was a kill or be killed moment. When someone has to use their gun, Hank, it has a lifelong impact, doesn't it? And when someone's recovering as well, like my point is, this young man's been through a lot, and we're hoping he comes to the other side and then has a long, long career as a police officer.
The amount of trauma that this young officer has just experienced in the matter of seconds is probably going to be with him for the rest of his life. There's no doubt about that. You can just picture in your mind, being stabbed in the leg, and mentally being at the point in time where you think, I've got to shoot this guy or I'm going to die. He definitely is going to need some follow-up counseling and treatment to help deal with this. And of course, now he's the subject of an SIU investigation, so he's got to go through that. And that will drag on for months and months and months. Hopefully, no charges are laid against the officer, but that's going to be in the back of his mind for the next 6 to 8 months while that investigation is ongoing. And after that, he's got to go right back onto the street and work that same area that he's working at. And he's going to think about that every time he drives past that intersection.
John Reed, Hank Edzinga, joining us. John Reed's president of the Toronto Police Association. And Hank is, of course, our 640 Toronto crime specialist and a former Toronto police inspector. John, Hank laid that out, 22-year-old guy, in essence, a kid. And he chooses law enforcement. So if I were to speak to him, I'd say, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for being out there for us. But there's a road back, isn't there, for what he went through on Friday? And I want to know about support systems and how he's guided along to get back to where he's capable of being, able to serve and protect us again. What transpires in that process?
Yeah, so what will happen, Greg? We were there with him the night of at the hospital. I was speaking with him. And I will tell you, he's a very, very eager young man, loves this job. I can tell just by speaking with him, very popular with his colleagues. And in speaking with him, I think at the time, everything hadn't settled in really, quite honestly, as far as what had just transpired with him in his life and how his life has changed. We will then continue. We follow up with him on a daily, every other day basis after the event and provide him with any support. And I have to remind everybody that it's not just him also. It's also his family. Yeah. You know, and these instances have massive impacts on the spouses, the parents, the children of officers that are injured. And not to mention, there's also our membership as well as a whole, the members that are working, but also their families. And what we'll do is we'll keep reaching out to this member, make sure they have the appropriate access to mental health supports as well. And then the service will also be involved in some training just to get the member, once they're ready to go back on the road, just to make sure they're comfortable again with all their equipment before they hit the street.
How was he when you talked to him, John? In a little bit of shock or and again, it'd be natural human nature to say, did I do all the right things? But it's like a car accident times 100. It happens so fast, I'm sure, for him.
Yeah, and I didn't discuss the event with him, obviously.
Yeah.
But just how he was feeling. He was obviously, I think, still in shock. He's still medicated at the time as well. But I think it's important to know that, you know, I think as a member of our service, he's a very proud member, and he did a great job with a very, very terrible situation.
Hank, a story, I don't know that it's a, well, I would make the case it's a slightly lighter story, but I can't figure this one out, but I bet you you'll inform an awful lot of people here ever considering this. It was a global news story from a few days ago. Toronto police have charged a man who misrepresented himself as an officer online and then allegedly sexually assaulted victims who were underage after buying them drinks. So it's a horrible story. Police alleged he pretended to be a cop to gain their trust and said the man was formerly a recruit at the Ontario Police College. So they have charged him. A 31-year-old man from Toronto has been charged. But Hank, how often do you come across cases like this where people are pretending to be cops? The penalties should be pretty harsh and severe if you're convicted of such a thing, let alone everything else he's done.
Well, there's certainly a breach of trust issue there. You know, I don't believe they actually laid that charge. And it really seems to be he's getting portrayed as a former recruit, when in fact he was a recruit, I believe, at the time of these offenses, and became former once he was arrested and charged. You know, so he's a cadet in training at the Ontario Police College, working for the Durham Regional Police. And the worrisome thing here is, how did this fellow get past all the background checks, all the psychological testing that's required to get onto the police force and be hired and be sent to the Ontario Police College for recruit training? So that's one question. But of course, we can look at the actions of a lot of police officers over the years, and you know, the question is, how did this person ever get hired in the first place? So taking advantage of having the status of a cadet and a police officer in training to sexually assault young people and go online to attract them and get them to bars is very concerning. And you know, thankfully they got him and got him before the courts before he became a full-fledged police officer armed with a firearm and other implements.
Yeah,
could certainly be scary in the wrong hands.
And it's worth noting there's charges of sexual interference. There's some various child pornography charges, which, of course, nobody would take lightly. John, important to note, again, he's innocent until proven guilty. These are only charges. But to Hank's point, the vetting process for the Ontario Police College, again, you don't have a record until you have a record. I'm sure they would have done their due diligence. But it's quite frightening to think that if you hadn't caught this guy, that this person would be an actual police officer. And then it all becomes, it could have gone so much more bad than it has. And it already has gone wrong with these alleged victims.
Yeah, and I can tell you, it's deeply disturbing to myself and all our members. You know, when you have anybody out there portraying themselves to be a police officer and they're not, you know, regardless of the fact this person was a cadet in training, that undermines people's confidence, you know, when they see a police officer in the street, as to whether or not an officer is an officer. Obviously, if they're in full uniform with a firearm, that's easy. But when you end up in a situation where an officer's in plain clothes and they have to identify themselves, then at that point, you know, people may start wondering. And I do believe every time that we deal with these situations, they are dealt with as quickly as possible, because our members, no police officer wants anybody out there pretending to be something they're not.
And John, I'm guessing the online world makes this a lot harder. You know, we all were a lot younger in a pre-online world, but the online world makes that kind of posing much more difficult to either A, spot, or B, see through for people, women or otherwise, that someone's going to lie about this.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think most people now are fairly current as far as, you know, the things that can be done with online material, even now with AI and all the other issues you run into. But I think once you're also dealing with younger people, unfortunately, they may be easily misled as far as people's true identity, which is something which obviously any individuals, any parents, any young people should be aware of and always be cautious of.
All right, let's wrap with this. And this is more a Peel police investigation along with the RCMP. But Wednesday is the 1 year anniversary of this Pearson heist that had us all wondering what on earth happened here. And though I understand it be an ongoing investigation, John, just to set it up for people, there was an Air Canada flight leaving Zurich with 400 kilograms of gold, nearly $2 million of cash. It came across the Atlantic to Pearson. And all of a sudden, after it makes it to Pearson Airport, we don't know what happened because someone took the gold and took the cash. So we're a year in. Give us your insight as to whether would Peel and the RCMP be consistently taking tips? Would there be officers assigned full time to this kind of case? Because a year out, they're still obviously hoping to solve it. It's still confounding everybody, including police I know.
Yeah, so an investigation, especially of that size, I would say the RCMP and Peel will probably still be working on it jointly. You know, on these cases, sometimes when they're very complicated cases, it takes time, and it takes time to collect evidence, build evidence. And also, you have to start looking at the gold, where it came from. It may be an investigation involving other countries as well and other individuals. So I would suggest that, you know, not having any information myself about that investigation, yeah, but it's still ongoing.
Is it almost like a TV show, Hank, where there's a tip line where somebody is waiting, and if they call a certain number, it's about this case? Or would they just ring up the Peel police and say, I've got information on this, or I've got a tip, or I've got a theory?
Well, either or. They can always call Peel police or call the RCMP directly, and they'll be forwarded to the proper investigative units. A lot of the tips these days come in online, so they can go online to the Peel Police portal as well. And Peel have some great investigators, you know, and just reading between the lines a little bit, they've been awfully quiet for the last year. So I'm pretty confident that they'll get somewhere with this investigation, and they're keeping it.
So the more quiet, the more they quiet they point. Are when they're not having news conferences, showing footage or asking if, you know, when they're not asking for tips, they're probably getting some and working slowly towards some sort of resolution on it.
Yeah, they're not going to leave a case like this alone, and they're going to continue pushing forward with it. And like I said, they're a great group of investigators over there, and I'm pretty confident they'll get to the end with this one.
Not too many cases like this, John. This was referenced, the scene in Goodfellas where Ray Liotta's celebrating in the shower, and there's not too many parallels and similarities. This, again, no arrests, no one was hurt, no one was killed, but there's no sign of all the cash and the gold.
Yeah, so I would suggest that these guys are probably pros. You know, they're out there doing whatever they've done. And I think, you know, when you start looking at these events, sometimes when you get the movies that come out of them, sometimes real life makes the best movies.
Seriously, yeah, because there's not too many concrete answers as to where this one's going. John Hank, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you very much.
John Reed's president of the Toronto Police Association. Hank Nzing is our 640 Toronto crime specialist and former Toronto police inspector, who you can hear throughout the week.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.